I found a book. I was not looking for that book. I didn't even know I had that book. Maybe you'd like to know the title. Maybe I'll tell you the title, but first... Mockery Rocks, Pat Boggs. Sometimes I call myself Patrick. Sometimes a 17-year-old calls me Dad. I will tell you the title of the book. But first, the theme of my life in politics... I'm not in politics, is about the idea that the party that likes to get dark money so they can get elected is the same party that votes for appropriating monies for government contractors, mostly defense contractors. So because of that, many people of that particular political party say, we got out of Afghanistan too soon. I think Marjorie Taylor Greene says that. But we didn't need to make war in Afghanistan after being there so long because it was pretty much at peace. I think we have a good situation in as much as I have heard, I don't have anything to quote here, but I have heard that we have used some, we have given some pretty advanced weapons systems or reconnaissance systems to Ukraine, and it has really helped them. So that might be better than using them in Afghanistan. The best place to try such things out would be Ukraine, not Afghanistan. That's my opinion. You're welcome to yours. The title of the book I was talking about is War is a Racket. I had that book on my bookshelf. It was written by Major General Smedley Darlington Butler. He lived from 1881 until 1940. His nickname was not Tom Cruise. His nickname was a Maverick Marine. He used that nickname, or somebody used it on him, long before the movies made by Tom Cruise. Long before... Top Gun! That nickname was used long before the Top Gun movies. This guy by the name of Butler was involved in the Spanish-American War and World War I and a couple of others. But he was against the big profiteering. And I might say me too. I know how David Letterman used to say our top 10. Often he would say top 10. So the top 10 airports. So the top 10 airports in the world. For nothing more than being busy. Passengers in, passengers out, planes in, planes out, the most of those things. And my hometown, Atlanta, Georgia, is back on top. It says that right here. Written by Joseph de Avila. I believe he's writing for the Washington Post, but maybe not. I get these things when I print them out a little confused. Instead of the Washington Post, it could be the Wall Street Journal. I subscribe to both. Let's see here. Number one, Atlanta for the year 2021 in passengers. in the millions for a whole year. Number two, Dallas-Fort Worth. Number three, Denver, Colorado, then Chicago, then Los Angeles, and then, I'm a little surprised, Charlotte, North Carolina. And then Orlando. You know why Orlando is busy? I have to blame it on Disney World. And recently, does the governor of the state of Florida want to separate Disney from the rest of the state? I don't understand that. And then after Orlando, there are two places in China. Guangzhou, China. And Chengdu, China. Last on the list, and we all can guess what the attraction is. It's Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas. Back to Ukraine, the Associated Press, hundreds or more Ukrainian fighters who made their stand inside Mariupol's bombed-out steel plant surrendered. That was before the weekend, you understand. It brings the total to over 1,700. Russia said that. Is that a reliable source? They said that last Thursday amid international fears about the fate of the prisoners as they fall into the hands of the Russian government. The Red Cross worked to register the soldiers as prisoners of war in a step toward ensuring their humane treatment under the Geneva Conventions. In Mariupol, the nearly 3-month siege, really that long? That has turned the strategic port city into a symbol of the war's horrors drew ever closer to an end as the fighters in the last bastion of resistance continued abandoning the Azovstal steel plant on orders from above to simply save their lives. The Russian military said a total of 1,730 Ukrainian troops at that plant, that steel plant, have surrendered since last Monday, which is a week ago now. At least some were taken by the Russians to a former penal colony in territory controlled by Moscow-backed separatists, which is not really the same as the Russian government. The separatists are actually Ukrainian. A separatist official said others were hospitalized. It was not clear how many fighters were left at the maze of tunnels and bunkers at the plant. Russia, in recent weeks, had estimated that it had been battling about a couple of thousand troops in that same plant. The International Committee of the Red Cross said that it has registered hundreds of POWs from the plant under an agreement between Russia and Ukraine. It did not say whether it had visited the prisoners. While Ukraine said it hopes to get the soldiers back in a prisoner swap, Russian authorities have threatened to investigate some for war crimes and put them on trial, branding them Nazis? Nazis? The defense of the steel plant has been led by Ukraine's Azov Regiment, and somebody says that they have origins on the far right. And that idea has been seized by the Kremlin as part of its effort to cast its invasion as a war against Nazi influence in Ukraine. But I don't believe there's any Nazi influence, because you gotta say, who is the chief Nazi? And you gotta trace it back to a leader. Amnesty International had pushed for the Red Cross to be given access to the troops, citing lawless executions allegedly carried out by Russian forces in Ukraine, and saying the Azovstal defenders must not meet with the same fate. The same fate as whom? The same fate as the ones who were lawlessly executed. The emptying of the plant would allow Russia to claim complete control of Mariupol, a long-sought victory, but one that holds largely symbolic importance at this point, since the city is already effectively under Moscow's control, and military analysts say most of the Russian forces that were tied down by the drawn-out fighting have already left. Well, if you leave, it can fall back into the hands of the Ukrainians. The Russians keep running in and committing atrocities and then getting out. Where do they get out to? Moscow? I hope so. President Joe Biden arrived in South Korea, the first stop on his trip to Asia. And the second stop means that now he's in Japan. But when on Friday they talked about him arriving in South Korea, they didn't talk about the time difference. This part of the world, South Korea and Japan, are way past the international dateline. So on Thursday, they could report that he arrived on Friday. So after crossing the international dateline and going to South Korea, President Biden needs to have a nice place to have a nice rest. He'll be in Japan for 3 days. Biden's last visit to Japan was in 2013 as a vice president in the Obama administration. He's not going to drop in at our house while he's in Japan. He doesn't even know that old Patrick lives in Japan. Japan has already accepted a certain number, like 1,000 people from Ukraine. The people who have come from Ukraine. I wonder, would they like to go back? I mean, I want to make them welcome in Japan. And the government of Japan does too. They don't speak Japanese. They don't have any money. What are they going to do? Hang out until it's time to go back? I wonder. There has to be a plan, I say. I want to thank you for listening to this Rock of Mockery. Thank you.